Welcome to the Your Own Medicine podcast. Thank you for listening. My name is Callie Klug, and I am a yoga teacher and somatic practitioner in Southern California. Your Own Medicine podcast was really created with this idea and this intention of bringing knowledge to you to access the medicine within you and within your own body. So thank you for listening. Let's go. Welcome to this week's episode. If you're listening to this around the time this podcast comes out, you have less than a week before registration closes on the Journey to Paradise retreat. It is going to be absolutely heavenly. Journey to Paradise retreat is from June 23rd to the 27th in the Sequoias of California. You can expect daily yoga and meditation, daily somatic workshops, an ecstatic dance party under the stars, delicious Ayurvedic-inspired meals, and it's all held at a 50-acre property in the forest of the California mountains with an on-site river, two cedar saunas, and hammocks galore. And it is literally paradise. It's named very aptly. Paradise Ranch is where we're hosting this retreat. Me and one of my good friends, Tatiana Nocello. She's a woman's embodiment coach. And yeah, it's going to be amazing. We have one luxury glamping spot left and a shared tent. And then we have two glass cabins that are like luxury glass cabins, literally all glass. You can see out, but no one can see in, with a private cedar hot tub and an outdoor shower and kitchenette. Absolutely breathtaking, these cabins. I've never seen anything else like it. We have two of those left for either single occupancy or double occupancy. So come and join us. It's going to be amazing. You don't want FOMO. Like, that's going to be so awkward if you're like looking at your Instagram and you're like, oh, I wish I went, but I didn't because blah, blah, blah. Don't. It's not a good feeling. Come join us. It's going to be an amazing week. You can secure your spot. I will link it below in my stand store and enjoy the episode. This episode's amazing. Sarah Honey is brilliant, very science-oriented. And I originally wanted to talk to her about the misinformation around more intensive practices like cold plunging, fasting, HIIT workouts, and how those are not great for women during all parts of a woman's cycle. But the conversation evolved into something very different, mostly focusing around women's sexual health. And it was just really, really beautiful the way that she articulated everything. And yeah, it was just a breath of fresh air on this particular topic. So I hope you enjoy.
All right.
Welcome, Sarah. If you can just explain who you are and what you do and where you are too.
Yeah, sure. My name's Sarah Honey. I'm the woman behind Arc Woman. It's a online clinic and educational resource platform for women. And it used to just be in Australia, but it's kind of catapulted and become a worldwide thing now, which is pretty exciting. And I'm a nutritionist by trade and biochemist by trade. And then I've also specialized in women's reproductive health with the FEM Institute. So I have about 8 years of study in my belt. And then on top of that, a bunch of mentoring, and now have kind of like went out on my own to own my own clinic and run my own clinic and educational resources, which is pretty fun. So books, masterclasses, YouTube, Spotify, like all of the things you kind of need to have to run like an online business is kind of there. And then I have like my charts and things like that as well. I've just kind of aimed to allow like very low cost all the way up to high cost for women to educate themselves to basically heal their reproductive health through education. I think that's my main thing, is that I was like, I can do one-on-one with people, or I could, you know, educate hundreds of people through one resource, and then spend more time, you know, trying to educate other women as well. And then like another part of my business is going out on country. In Australia, we say on country, or like in community, or with mob. And that's educating Indigenous women in Australia that don't have any resources or access to this type of information. It's very shameful. And then going to places like Indonesia and educating women before they get into marriage, or just as they're getting into marriage, about their reproductive health care and stuff like this as well. So just trying to educate as many people as I can.
That's amazing. I have some questions just that came up while you were explaining that. Number one, is your real last name Honey? That's amazing.
And I used to be a kindergarten teacher, so it used to be Miss Honey.
That's so cute. That's so cute. And then you said you have a clinic. Is this like the virtual clinic, or do you have a brick and mortar?
No, it's online for the
Okay.
most part, because half of my audience isn't in Australia. So yeah, and I think that, they're taking advantage of the exchange, stock exchange, and the fact that the Australian dollar might not be as good as the pound or the American dollar. So half of my clients are Australian, and some of them do come to my clinic that I have run out of my office in my home. And then most of them are actually online, because I serve basically the world. I've women in most continents that are in my clinic at the moment.
That's so cool. Love. Okay, I have so many questions for you. We like went over a little bit before we started recording. So, the main thing that drew me to your work was how, well, first of all, your content's amazing, just visually and just all. I'm just so impressed. I don't know how you create it at the
Thanks.
volume you do with the quantity. I'm like, I don't get it, but I'm really curious. You talk a lot about how there's like a lot of misinformation around these high intensity therapies that are really popular and trending right now, like maybe even HIIT, cold therapy, fasting, things like that, and how they're either not ideal for women's bodies or not ideal for the entirety of a woman's menstrual cycle. So I'm just curious if you can speak on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that speaks to the fact that we've only started studying women's bodies. I mean, there was ruling put forward, and I think in the US and the UK in 1993, between 1993 and 1997, basically saying, hey, you need to study women's bodies. Like, we actually need to make it a law that if you're studying like a hormonal function, for example, we need to study male. We can't just study male bodies and apply it to female bodies. So that's what, 23 to 27 years ago.
Wow, that's
So we have
embarrassing.
this paradigm, and yeah, it takes about 17 years for avant-garde research to reach the forefront. And now that is closing because of people like me. And it's also closing because people are realizing, oh, a forest plot is not that fucking hard to read. I can figure out how to, decipher this science, which is also a problem because everyone has lots of bias.
Right.
But nothing's perfect, but we do see this over and over and over again, that we are applying male science to female bodies, and this old adage of women are little men, and they're just not as strong as us, and they're a little bit like they're illogical, and all of these things, and just being like, we can apply this science to females. And what we're finding out through the science now, and the science that has been, that's now kind of being realized and understood a little bit more, is that no, we can't do that at all. Female bodies are a little bit more intricate hormonally, especially than male bodies. And so yeah, these intense therapies that work incredibly well for male bodies, like veganism, high intensity interval training, ice bathing, fasting, all of these things, you can do at different parts in the cycle for a woman. But if you did the same thing in a, say in luteal as you would ovulatory or follicular, you would have very different outcomes. And now we're having science that's proving that as well.
Okay, interesting. You said veganism. Can you like, I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think veganism has been pushed as this be all end all, like plant-based. I was plant-based for 7 years, and actually made me quite sick. And I have seen over and over and over again male bodies doing quite well with veganism, more than I would see women's bodies. I think women, we need more iron, for one, because we bleed for a week every single month, if you're lucky. Some women are bleeding out a little bit more than that because of the high copper in our diet, but that's a whole other conversation. And then we also have the fact that women need more minerals, and we need a little bit more protein, because we're producing different neurotransmitters according to what sex hormone is dominant at that time. For example, we need more protein because we're going to be producing different amounts of serotonin and dopamine and GABA at different points in our cycle as well. And we're bearing babies. Like, our body is primed for abundance. And I just don't see how a plant-based diet can do that. It's very hard for me in clinic to find long-term solutions with women who are plant-based, or even vegetarian. Healing
Wow.
takes a lot longer, a lot longer. Yeah, a lot longer,
Yeah.
because animal foods are nutrient dense, and animal foods are nutrient dense, and there's specific nutrients that women need to thrive. And that means your endocrine system is thriving, whether you want babies or not. That's the whole purpose of this cycle. And if you want to be a healthy woman, you need to have abundance, right? We need to have, your body's always looking for, is there extra resources out there to supply life to another being, basically, right? And so if there isn't, we're going to be in a state of scarcity. We're going to be in a state of disease, basically. And we are going to start to denigrate our reproductive health, which means we are denigrating our overall health.
That's really interesting. I know for myself, I got off of birth control 2 years ago, and so I started like experiencing the ebb and flow of my hormonal cycle, and I really noticed. I also became I was plant-based for I think 3 years, and I came off of that around that time because I started craving red meat so much during my when I would bleed. Like I was really craving red meat, and I hadn't had that craving when I was on birth control. So I thought that was really interesting.
Well, your body's telling you what it needs, right? Red meat is really rich in zinc and magnesium, which the birth control pill, I'm not sure what birth control pill you're on, but if you're on estradiol and progestin, very often those things are going to be depleting B vitamins, zinc, and magnesium, and a bunch of other vitamins and minerals as well. And it's funny enough, red meat has all of those things. And so no wonder we're craving that around the time we're bleeding, because we need to sequester the nutrients that we've lost through our bleed.
Okay. I had to open the door for the Wi-Fi to come in better. I don't know. I didn't know it couldn't travel through the door, but anyway, my partner's probably listening in the other room going like, "I told you." We talk about this all the time, and he actually, I know this is a man's body, but his nails were like really brittle and weak when he was vegan. And yeah, it's just interesting. Yeah, that whole argument's interesting about
Yeah, I think nature
veganism.
is a bell curve. I mean, you have these amazing people online like Ellen Fisher. She's given birth to how many children now? Six or seven children. And she's been plant-based for years. All of her children are plant-based. Her husband is plant-based, and they are thriving. You can see that they're absolutely healthy. I'm not going to argue with that. I think the thing with nutrition at the moment is that, like, I'm going to ask you a question. Name one animal that can live in all Earth's terrains, one species of animal. So the Arctic, the Sahara Desert, in the jungle, maybe in the desert plains somewhere. Like, name one animal that can survive in all of those places.
Humans.
Humans, right? So that
Yeah.
does one is one diet going to suit everyone? So
Yeah.
I think, so I think some people definitely can survive and thrive on a vegan diet, and some people can't. But what I've seen in my clinic is probably because of all the environmental stresses we have as well. If you add on top of that a vegan diet, that's probably going to denigrate your health a little bit more. So there are arguments for either side, but I'm just saying,
Right.
like, my experience being vegan and living in the vegan world for 7 years didn't leave me better off health-wise. It left me worse off. And I see that's a pattern I see in a lot of women. But there are some women I see who have been vegan forever, and they're incredibly healthy. And that's like all the power to you. That's amazing.
Right.
But I'm not going to go and say there's one diet for everyone. But generally, I have seen veganism do women's health a little bit worse, and it does seem to help men a little bit more. And you know what? Nutrition science is still pretty new, so we'll find out what that's actually about in the future. I don't really know.
Yeah, it seems to be every few years it kind of oscillates back and forth on that topic. We mentioned like birth control, and you have this thing on your feed that like is so disturbing, genuinely, regarding birth control. And obviously it's carcinogenic, that's terrible alone. But something more enraging is that you have a post about how it causes your clitoris to shrink, which like what the fuck?
Well, because when we're taking estradiol and progestin, which are the common, hormones that are in hormonal birth control, that basically stops your body from producing our own hormones, and that can cause atrophy in tissues like the clitoris.
That feels like hate
Smoking as
crime.
well. Smoking and vaping also causes vasoconstriction in these vesicles. Oh yeah. And like smoking marijuana, which is another thing we'll probably talk about as well, is known to cause clitoral shrinkage.
That's only if you smoke it like a lot, though, right?
Well, the jury's out on that. We don't have science to prove or disprove that. We've just seen that there is a high correlation between smoking marijuana, like or vaping, or like nicotine use, or hormonal
Okay.
birth control, having being
What? They're
associated
all in
with.
the same basket?
Yeah, they're kind of not in the same basket. The avenues in which they cause vasoconstriction or tissue
Okay.
damage or tissue, denigration is different, but they all kind of have the same effect. Yeah.
Oh, I hate
Yes.
that really
That
sucks.
gets women off birth control more often than saying that it's carcinogenic, because there is some evidence out there that says that birth control is protective, which to some degree it is protective against some cancers, but it does cause other cancers. We know it's a type 1 carcinogen, as recognized by the World Health Organization. But women don't really listen to that because
I did
there's a little
not
bit
know
of
that.
nuance. Yeah, but there is no nuance when you're saying your clit's going to shrink. And then I have heard lots and lots of women say my sex drive has been, is tanked after being on hormonal birth control for such a long time, which makes sense because you're not producing hormones anymore. Like, why would your body push resources into a space that's going to harness your sexual energy to convince you to reproduce if there's no reproductive hormones? Like, yeah, so it makes total sense.
Oh my God, it's so depressing. Yeah, it's funny, the carcinogenic thing in California, you probably saw when you lived here. There's like those placards on everything that's like prop whatever it is. California has to tell you that this place or this thing or this food has carcinogenic properties. So we kind of see it all the time here and we're like, well, everything gives you cancer. But I mean, you know what I mean. But the clitoris thing feels more aggressive,
Yeah.
more
And
in
I
your
think that's also pretty horrible because it's taking away one of life's beautiful pleasures. And like, sexual energy is one of the most important things for women to be integrating with, like the most important thing. And so when you don't have that, you're kind of like a bit lifeless, and you're like, well, what's the point in this at all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Birth control is an interesting phenomenon because in some ways it gave us like power as women to control our, or in theory, I mean, we can, yeah, control our fertility. And then also that sucks. And it does disconnect us from like our cycle
Yeah.
and our libido and all these things. So.
It was a step in the right direction at the time. I'm not unhappy it happened, you know what I mean? But like, the foundation on which the hormonal birth control pill, even the first trials in Puerto Rico, hundreds of women were made infertile. A few women died. Do you know about that?
No, girl.
Yeah. So the first hormonal birth control pills, they took offshore because they knew it was going to be too dangerous to hold within the US. And so they found Puerto Rican women and they gave it to them. And I think three or four, oh no, it was eight women died on that first trial. And then, hundreds of them had really serious symptoms, and it wasn't followed up. But I, from the studies I've read prospectively, I would assume that there was a lot of infertility that was caused by this medication that was given to them on trial. And then they fudged the results, they brought it back, and the same pill went on the market, but to a lesser degree. They had far less estradiol and progestin. And they changed around the ratio a little bit, but it still caused huge problems for female health and female reproductive health. Yeah. But the cachet was you had freedom. Is that like your husband couldn't, if you were in a abusive relationship, your husband couldn't impregnate you anymore. You know what I mean? You had a little bit of power over your life. And I think women were saying, okay, I might die of breast cancer, I might die of cervical cancer. I think women back then, I don't think they were dumb. I think they might have known that there was a risk because, we live our lives and we're talking to each other and we're saying, oh no, are you getting like acne? Are you getting all of these mood swings? Okay, but this is better than being at home with an abusive husband. This is better than having a baby I don't want to have. And so I think women made that choice. And that wasn't an incorrect choice. That was the best you could have done at that time. But the unfortunate thing is that we still have this pill. And we don't have those social problems anymore because the world has changed. And so I think it's high time for the pharmaceutical industry to step up. But they're not going to do that until women say we're not going to take this pill anymore, which they are in droves. And I think it is very interesting, this movement of women saying I'm not taking this pill anymore because it's dangerous and I can feel the negative impacts on my body. And then, the Washington Post makes all these, makes, this propaganda and interviews people like Nicole. She has an amazing Instagram account and kind of, ransack the fertility awareness method education space and saying that there's no science behind it and it's dangerous, whereas that's just absolutely not the truth. So it is really interesting to see this movement. I'm not against the pill necessarily. I'm against what it does, and I'm against the fact that women don't know about it.
Yeah. I don't know how it is in Australia, but I know here doctors put, not always, but they put women and girls on the pill really young, like as young as like, 12, 13, even if they're not sexually active for acne problems. And I think one of the main things is acne. Does that happen in Australia?
Yeah, like most of the Western world, women are, and that's the other thing, is that women are getting their puberty a lot earlier. And so I've heard of women being put on the pill as, girls as young as 9 being put on hormone birth control. Yeah, it's in very extreme cases. These decisions aren't taken lightly by doctors. Very often, this is a girl that is experiencing extreme period pain. And, it's uncomfortable for a 9-year-old to be at school and had to have a period when no one else has a period. So I could imagine that that would be the choice that's best for her in that moment. But, when you actually zoom out and say, there is a girl who is 9-year-old, who is 9 years old in this world, who is on hormonal birth control. And most of the time women are put on hormonal birth control is for non-reproductive and non-conception reasons, right? Heavy periods, painful periods, acne, mood swings, all of these things that can be easily solved with nutrition and alternative therapies, or just like a blood test and like maybe taking a specific supplement. But it is just this band-aid that doctors put on women because it just covers up the reproductive system. Yeah.
Kind of depressing when you think about it
yeah, it's a band-aid that's being used as a cure, and it's not at all. It's a band-aid for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty bleak, the women's reproductive health in general, I think, from the Western standpoint. But changing pace a little bit, you made a post recently, and this is kind of going in a different direction, but where you were talking about, there's that trend recently that's, would you rather be stuck in the forest with a man or a bear? And you said, we don't do cortisol kings. And I'm just curious if you can, like, I think I get the vibe, but I would love for you to just like tell me more about what you mean and what was behind that post.
Well, that post was like, I think I went through a breakup almost 2 months ago. And that's where I became just like more of a raging feminist online, because I was like, I've just had my time wasted. I was like, everyone needs to learn from my mistakes, and also just don't want to be that person online where I'm like, my life is perfect all the time. I'm like, no, I'm heartbroken right now. But it's given me this really beautiful perspective on the patriarchy and like living within it and how women have the most leverage and how we need to realize that. And that's also our Achilles heel, is our sexuality. That's our power, and that's also our Achilles heel. And what I was talking to is about the cortisol king is just like, if he's not the king of your heart, he's the king of your adrenal glands. There's no in between. If he's not in your heart, he's in your adrenal glands. You've got to dump that man, because cortisol is a hormone, and you could be eating all the organic food and birth working and, hanging out with your friends and going to the sauna and getting 8 hours of sleep. But if you're dating someone who's really stressful, your cycles are going to be shit, like mine were for months before this breakup. The past 2 bleeds I've had were the easiest I've had in months.
Oh, and I was like,
nothing has changed, but you're not here.
Well, right in time for Taylor Swift's new album.
Oh yeah,
so kind of like slay for that, for like timing up to that. That's cool.
Yeah, but it connects with the whole bear thing as well, though, because I think when men, I think you were saying before, like, why would, like, to your partner was saying, why would women choose a man instead of a bear? And it's just like, oh, you don't get it. There are worse things than death. I'd rather die than have to go through what a man could potentially do to me. I think the chances of being attacked and killed by a bear are 1 in 2.1 million, but 133 women are killed every single day by a man they know. So.
Okay, coming in hot with the stats.
Yeah. So, and that's what it is. And I think women innately know that their sexual energy and their sexual trauma is is way more impactful than physical trauma. And we know this
Totally.
scientifically. If you read Vagina by Naomi Wolf, she connects these two things really beautifully. She, you know, she talks, if anyone listening, we're going to be talking about rape and sexual assault. So if you don't want to listen to this, that's fine. But in Sierra Leone, there are child soldiers and the, you know, the warlords will send them out to rape and pillage villages and to sexually assault women. And these, you can't make the argument that these men want to do that and they're getting sexual satisfaction out of this. No 12-year-old boy who's being forced to rape actually enjoys doing this. They're doing it because they're being told to do and they have a gun against their head. So why are they doing this though? Why are they raping these women? Why are they sexually assaulting these women? Well, because they figured out that if you sexually assault and you rape a woman, you control their sexuality. And if you control her sexuality, the light in her eyes basically goes off. When a woman is sexually assaulted, she doesn't produce any more testosterone, which is what testosterone and oxytocin is released when we have orgasms, right? And if we don't have that, our inner ear balance goes out by about 84%. So women are literally easier to push over when you sexually assault and rape them. And so this is one of the tactics that warlords in Sierra Leone have understood, and this is also one of the tactics that men in the patriarchal world understand, whether they understand that or not. And women are waking up to this as well and saying, "No, I'd rather die at the hands of a bear than being sexually assaulted by a man because my life isn't going to be worth living after what you do to me." And women understand that on an innate level. And that's what it really speaks to. But it also really speaks to something interesting that it's like, okay, well, you understand that your sexual health and your sexual well-being is the most important thing in your life. So why aren't more women actually working in that space? If we actually prioritized our pleasure and put our pleasure first, what would actually happen to our health if that's at the center point of what we actually value the most, more than our own lives? Yeah.
I'm just processing.
Yeah, sorry, I said a lot just then.
No, love. I felt I was like hallelujah, singing hallelujah. Yeah, shit. I mean, first of all, like literally sickening. I mean, I understand why they tell them to rape the women because it does something to you on a spiritual level, like it's sexual
Yeah.
assault. It's like a on a human level, it's just, yeah, like you said, the light in your eyes kind of goes. And I say that with so much knowing that people are extremely resilient on all levels, like we're made to be resilient. And at the same time, it's just, yeah, and women know this, like we've all lived it, you know? And then you said something at the end about like if women know innately that this is where their power lies. Why don't we go towards that more? Do you have a theory for that?
Shame.
Well, yeah. I was gonna
Yeah.
say like that I think we're very still oriented around the patriarchy. It's just so
Well, yeah, I think women need
intense.
to learn to centralize themselves for sure. And that means centralizing your pleasure as well, right? So like, and I posted something just today about like, you know, I think it's around 35% or 24% of women, when they're experiencing an orgasm, they like a penis or a toy or fingers to stay very still inside of them. And then I think it's 35% is slight motion. And then the rest is a slight in and out motion. And so when we look at porn, if we understand sex and we think about sex, when a woman is orgasming, we're like, a man's like, I need to go really fucking hard. And it's like, well, hang on a second. No, you're overlaying your sexual experience onto mine. And they're completely different, right? And so if we even understand that, if women actually had their first sexual experiences with themselves instead of with a man and being like, how can I perform? What can I do to make myself irreplaceable? Because I've centralized men to such a degree. But what would happen if women were like, no, that doesn't feel good? Or like, I'm not having this sexual experience unless you're going to go down on me. Like the amount of like women sometimes who message me and be like, my boyfriend doesn't go down on me. What do I do? I'm like, you dump him. You get a new one.
No, literally dump him.
Dump him.
Literally leave him.
Yeah, you need to centralize yourself.
Period.
Your sexual well-being is the most important thing in your life, and you need to prioritize it. Don't prioritize him. There's like a there's 4.5 billion of him. Like, get
You're
another.
fine. Oh my
Yeah.
gosh. I have some single friends right now, and I'm just like, this thing, this guy, really? He's stressing you out. You know how you are? But yeah, I saw your thing and I was like, I want to send this. but I'm not gonna. Crap, I was gonna oh yeah, you said if only women could connect to having their first experience with themselves or connecting to their own whatever boundaries or ability to just be like, that doesn't feel good. I want this. Like, what's some practical advice you could offer of like someone listening to this and is like, well, that sounds great, but how do I actually get to that point, whether you're in a relationship or not, to get there, to, you know, feel confident enough to even feel like you can say that.
Well, like it's the chicken or the egg, right? So the thing that's going to get you there is the thing that's going to be the end result. So start slow. Like if you've never really masturbated before, start with like underwear on, touching your vulva or touching your breasts with a bra on. And then when you feel comfortable, take those things off and maybe introduce a little bit of organic coconut oil on the external part of your vulva, never inside because it messes up your vaginal microbiome. And then massaging and actually feeling into what I actually feel here. Do I feel pain? Do I feel numbness? What sensations do I feel? Very often, if you feel pain, it'll turn into numbness, and then numbness will turn into some sort of sensation, and then it'll turn into pleasure. Won't be in 1 5-minute massage session. That'll happen over a period of time. So I think vulva massage is incredible, and I think Taoist and tantric philosophy and sexual practice talks a lot about that, and it's also lingam massage, which is the male counterpart of that as well. So that's a really great place to start. And then when you're like, okay, I'm ready to go inside, actually go inside. Another beautiful thing that you could invest in is probably yoni mapping. Not a lot of women know about yoni mapping, but it's where you go to a woman who understands the reproductive tract and the reproductive anatomy of a woman. And she basically goes in there and goes, okay, this is your A spot, this is your G spot, this here is your cervix, and this is what it feels like. And where do you feel here? And what do you feel here? And it's a really grounding experience to be like, oh, okay, this is my anatomy. And that's really great as well. So that's something you could invest in. And then also just massage and then playing around with different toys. Maybe watching some nice porn, you know, not the stuff that's on Pornhub or whatever, that involves like sex trafficking and all that gross stuff. But like maybe going out and finding some like yummy feminist porn and just seeing what turns you on and what type of people you like and what type of movement you are attracted to. You know, I think that's really great. And just trying out those things on your own. If you see a toy that you like, trying that out. And then also just like seeing all the different types of orgasms you have, like having positions that you would have in sex with a man, or maybe a woman who has a strap-on on if you're into penetrative sex, and finding out, okay, do I like being on top? Do I like going from behind? Do I like, you know, do I like being in missionary? And finding out for yourself what I actually like. And then when you're doing that, you're more likely to be getting orgasms. And when you have orgasms, you have more oxytocin and testosterone, which gives you more of a backbone. Because then when you go into these sexual experiences, you're like, no, I have a foundation and a respect for myself, and I've centralized my sexual experience with myself to such a degree that no, I don't actually like it when you do that. It's like kind of wasting both of our time. So like do this instead. And very often, if you're with a man, he will love that. Men love direction. They're like, okay, cool. They're just there to please. They're just happy to be there. So if you're like, no, I like this, this, and this, they're like, this is perfect because I know exactly what to do now. Like you've given me a perfect guide and I know what to do. So I think that's really great.
Yeah, I love that. Just even in my body when you were talking about all of that, it's like so exciting and empowering. And I did yoni mapping at a tantra retreat one time, and it's really
Cool.
cool to see, like, to literally have a map of the sensations within your vagina. And yeah, I feel like that's really interesting. How you're connecting the hormones too that you get from orgasm to, I mean, yeah, you're gonna just feel better and more confident and, you know, like you said, have more of a backbone when you're having more orgasms.
Well, it's in our language, right? When we're pissed off at someone, we tell them to go get fucked. But really, that person probably needs to go and get fucked because that's going to relax you. That's going to turn your sympathetic nervous system off. You're going to be on your parasympathetic. Like, whenever I need to come up with an idea or I have writing block or I need to come up with something for content, I like don't reach for coffee or anything that's going to stimulate me. I very often will go and like have like a session with myself where I'm having a few orgasms. And also from a brain chemistry point of view, very often we're in this default mode network, right? All the time. And we're in our amygdala and we're just thinking about, not really thinking about it. We're just kind of running through patterns we always run through. This is what I do during the day. This is how I work. This is what I drink. This is how I exercise. This is how I speak to people. This is how I speak to myself, right? But when we interrupt that with an orgasm, we're actually creating more blood flow into the prefrontal cortex, which is creation, communication, and consciousness, right? That's very often what's in here.
Wow.
We judge an animal's intelligence level based on how big their prefrontal cortex is, right? So we say that things like sperm whales might be smarter than human beings because their prefrontal cortex is, 15 times bigger than ours by ratio of size.
Wow.
So we know that they value communication and connection and also sexuality. When in animals with a huge prefrontal cortex, like humans, they're very often very sexual creatures. Bonobos have a kind of a big prefrontal cortex, so do apes, and they're both pretty horny creatures, chimpanzees as well. Sex
And
is important.
whales?
Whales, yeah, whales, sperm whales.
They have sex for pleasure?
They do, yeah.
Oh
Porpoises do have
my
sex
God.
for pleasure. Yeah, dolphins, orcas. Maybe not blue whales so much because it's such a tumultuous time because there's like eight bucks like kind of chasing after a female. It kind of sounds a bit stressful. But
Oh,
if
that
that wasn't
sounds.
their sexual culture, maybe it would be fun. Who
Yeah, that
knows?
sounds kind of intense.
Yeah, if you're into that, like
I love that for you, if
I'm
that's
not going
your
to yuck
thing.
the whale's yum.
Yeah, I can see it being fun.
Yeah.
Kind of any last thoughts on that before we move into a different direction?
No.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier about how weed affects your female hormones, and I'm like I mentioned before, I'm asking this selfishly because I love weed. I have ADHD and it just makes my brain quiet. Maybe I should try to masturbate instead of
I think so.
smoke. Like, just from what you're saying, I'm like, might give it a try next time. But can you just speak on you recently made a post on just the post, the response to the post, and anything else that is related to that topic?
Yeah, so I had quite a few women reach out to me over the past months, kind of asking me about marijuana. And I interviewed a doctor recently, and we couldn't upload that episode because of where the legalities are around marijuana in Australia. He's been previously fined by the TGA, which is the governing body in Australia. And he was like, I sent this to my lawyer and I can't actually post this. And I was like, damn, that's really sad because we spoke about a lot of things. There is a lot of nuance in marijuana and female health, but there also isn't. We know for sure, and it's well documented, that THC isn't good for female sexuality or female, sorry, female reproductive health, which I'm so sorry to say.
I hear you.
Yeah, so it's predominantly THC. So the THC and to some degree the CBD interrupts how our hypothalamus reacts. So in a normal cycle, so say we've just finished bleeding. Just before we finish bleeding, the hypothalamus is kind of checking around and going, it's this gland in the brain. If you put your tongue on the top of the roof of your mouth and you imagine an inch or 2 centimeters up, that's where your hypothalamus is, right? And so it's this gland. It's almost like I say it's the grandmother of your brain. She keeps an eye on everything. So the nutrients in your food, blood flow, she regulates heartbeat, blood pressure, your lungs, so breathing, all of these automatic processes, even digestion to some degree as well. And we know we used to think that we used to not be able to tap into this arm of the nervous system, but people like Wim Hof are now proving that you can consciously tap into this with a lot of hard work. But for the most part, most people, this is an automated process center. And so she's keeping an eye on everything, and she's also in charge of reproduction. And so at the start of your cycle, what she's doing is going, okay, do we have enough food? Are we resting enough? Are we in a calm environment? Do we have connection to community? Do we have abundance, basically? Do we have more than enough to bring a child into the world? Because if we're not, I'm not going to release follicular stimulating hormone. And if we do, I am, because that's going to start the risky process, which is it is kind of a risk for your body in some ways to start the process of possible reproduction in another cycle. So I'm going to reach out and I'm going to release follicular stimulating hormone. That releases into the whole body. Impacts on the ovaries and it stimulates, about 15 follicles to develop. And all of the estrogen that is produced come from one follicle that becomes the dominant follicle. That reaches up to a high set point and that signals to your hypothalamus again, okay, let's do another second check. Do we have enough food? do we have enough resources for abundance for an extra person in this body right now? Are we in a calm environment? Are we drinking enough water? Do we have enough rest? Okay, we have all of those things. Okay, I'm going to release luteinizing hormone, which is going to cause ovulation. That causes ovulation. And then what happens is because the ovum isn't there anymore, progesterone is now being produced from the follicle, which is now called the corpus luteum, right? And so the corpus luteum is waiting around for implantation, because what might happen is, say that ovum gets fertilized and then it snuggles up into the endometrial lining that estrogen worked so hard to proliferate all the blood onto, right? And that releases human growth hormone. And so that signals to your corpus luteum, okay, keep producing progesterone, progesterone, pro-pregnancy for me until I can produce my own from my own placenta, right? It forms this negative feedback loop in connection with each other. Say that doesn't happen. No human growth hormone is sensed from the corpus luteum. The corpus luteum will start to disintegrate. The amount of progesterone that's produced will decrease, and that causes the cervix to open and the endometrial lining to bleed out, and the whole cycle begins again. What happens with weed and what happens with anything that disturbs the endocrine system is that what we're seeing is that THC impacts how our hypothalamus is viewing where we are in our cycle. And it stops us from releasing follicular stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone. So you see the problem here, right? It's actually stopping us from producing any of the, it's stopping us from going through a normal hormonal cycle. Mm-hmm. And so it's highly associated with fertility, infertility, right? Because we're not releasing hormones on time within the right amounts in harmony. And we can't talk about hormones without also talking about the anatomy and physiology. All of these things are connected. So unfortunately, we are seeing that. And even to some degree, we're seeing CBD has negative consequences for women who are pregnant and their babies as well.
Wow, even CBD, that sucks.
Yeah, we are seeing some evidence of that. You know, it's hard though, because all of these trials that have been done and all the science we've collected, it's still pretty new. And the science that we have needs to be replicated in order to say, yes, we know this for sure. Mm. So it's kind of up in the air. And so a lot of health practitioners, myself included, are saying, you know, the science we have at the moment is suggesting that it isn't healthy. And I'm open to, if science comes out in the next 10 years and debunks everything I've said and says, no, it's completely healthy for women, I'm going to start believing that because we have science to believe that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what we have right now is actually strongly suggesting that it is not so good for women's hormonal health and reproductive health. Yeah, it's also, you know, estrogen, it's also highly estrogenic. So if you have heavy periods, it's going to make your periods heavier. Oh, yeah. Very often in my clinic, when a woman has very, very heavy periods, the first question I ask her is, do you smoke weed? Do you take a gummy? Okay, we need to cut that out. If that's the first thing you do, and the impact it has on her cycle not being super heavy anymore and her not hemorrhaging, and then all the flow on effects from that as well, because if you're hemorrhaging and if you're bleeding out a lot, you're going to have some form of anemia and your body's going to be under some form of stress because you have to produce all of these red blood cells all the time. So if you cut that out, then what happens? The estrogen goes down because it, you know, it's not estrogenic anymore. You're not producing, you're not increasing your intake of something that is highly estrogenic, that's causing your endometrium to overpack a little bit and you're losing blood.
What?
So that's something that we see a lot of time in clinic as well, is that we're seeing heavy bleeding and, you know, the symptoms of anemia being highly associated with cannabis use.
That is crazy. That, like,
yeah.
I don't know why that, like, maybe the visual of just the heavy bleeding, like, that's just crazy that you see that connection often. And regarding the science too, like, I know that from just in somatic work, a lot of times practitioners will recommend that you don't smoke weed because it can it impedes your kind of similar to coffee, it impedes your ability to heal CPTSD, because like coffee, you're in, you know, introducing this stimulant in your body and your nervous system that can cause adrenaline and cortisol and stuff. And then with weed, they say it's like a temporary suppressant. So you might temporarily suppress it, but then it always, those hormones always come up the next day or later or whenever. So I'm sure that...
There is some science that also says that it blocks estrogen digestion, phase one and phase two digestion out of the liver. So we don't realize that we actually poo out our estrogen. And so when we're talking about estrogen dominance, it's like, okay, there's three parts to this. One, we're producing too much estrogen. Why? Or where is it coming from? right? So I had a client recently who was like, I increased my protein intake and my periods got worse. I'm like, but where's your protein coming from? Or tofu. Okay. There's a huge amount of phytoestrogens in that. And that's impacting your body in a certain way. The amount you bleed is directly correlated to how much estrogen you have. Estrogen is a proliferative molecule, right? And so that's what we also say in clinic as well. If you have a history of heavy periods, that means you might also have a higher chance of things like breast cancer and cervical cancer because it is a proliferative molecule. It's carcinogenic. And that's also the pathway that the pill is carcinogenic because it has high estradiol, which is one of the types of estrogen. And the other part of that is the other two parts of it is why are we, is the liver not digesting estrogen enough? And so that's where that's where cannabis kind of comes in a bit, or marijuana comes in a bit, because it's actually blocking the estrogen being digested from the blood system through the liver into our duodenum, into our GI tract, right? So it's blocking it there. And then further down, maybe you're not having a poo as frequently as you can. And so estrogen is actually staying in your GI tract too long and it's being reabsorbed. And so when we're talking about estrogen dominance, it's either all of those three or a few of those three are having a problem. And that's what we're talking about when we're clearing our exit pathways and we're making sure we're not entering too much estrogen. And so we know that
Oh, I
cannabis
see.
is estrogenic and it also blocks estrogen from exiting the system. And so that means that estrogen stays in the system longer, and that means that it's packing more blood on the endometrium, which means our blood that which means we're going to be having anemia because all of our blood's going into our endometrium, and then we're bleeding it out, so we're having heavier bleeds that are also more painful, and that also means we have higher incidence of anxiety as well because estrogen is like binds serotonin in the brain. And that, too much of that can cause anxiety. So I see that a lot with women who smoke weed as well. They're like, I started using it for my anxiety, but my anxiety has gotten worse. And so that's where we're seeing cannabis has a relationship to this as well, on a hormonal and also on a neurochemical component as well.
Oh, wow. That's
Sorry, I went on a bit of a tangent there.
No, it's good. I love it's just it's so technical that I really have to focus on what you're saying and visualize
I'm
everything.
sorry.
No, it's fine. I appreciate it. We're running short on time here, so I'm gonna do one last question and then we'll wrap. Okay, so I guess my last question is, so your branding is phenomenal. Like I have a background in marketing and I appreciate your branding so much. It's just your website, your digital products, it's just all beautiful and all so it just fits. Like it feels very cohesive. And I'm just curious because there's a lot of, nature symbolism and I'm curious what your message is behind your branding or what inspired you for this kind of branding.
My website's going to crash after I say this again. I posted this on my story a few weeks ago and said that if you look at my website, the pinks that you see and like the yellows and the purples you see, I actually took a picture of my vulva and I used that as the color swatch for all of my branding.
That's awesome. That's
So
so cool.
it's literally my pussy. It's pussy power. So that's what it is. But also just nature. Like I live in such a beautiful place, and ultimately my mission is to educate women to a certain point where they're so connected to their bodies that it isn't, I just don't think the female anatomy is all that confusing. It's so intricate, but it's not confusing. It makes perfect sense. And I think that that's reflected in nature quite a lot. There is this intricate pattern, there is this intricate system that is cohesive and codependent on each other, but it's not complicated. It's perfectly designed. And that's how I see female bodies. And that's kind of how I like to lead with all of my marketing and all of my resources is like, how can I make this beautiful? Because women are beautiful. And how can I make this educational, comprehensive, and simple? And so that's kind of the value system I've always let lead through with it. And I just know that women just love beautiful things. And I love beautiful things. Like I'm very Venusian. Like I have Venus in most of my chart. So it is just
It
everything just has to
shows.
be pretty.
It shows.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, that does make a lot of sense actually. But yeah, even your food videos, just everything. Like I was scrolling feed before this, and I was just like, it's just so visually, it draws you in, and there's also something about your content that it just like lands well in my body, like the music you use, the visuals, like you say, you incorporate a
Thank
lot
you.
of where you live and your property, and it just feels like relaxing to even look at, even when you're saying weed's not good for your hormones. I'm like,
It's
I'll
a
be okay.
beautiful lake.
Don't think about it. Just look at the river. And I'm like, I can do
But I
it.
think there's also an element to it as well. Like in all of my lectures, if you listen closely enough and you turn it up, you'll hear bird sounds in the back. And I'm like, it's beautiful and it's very aesthetic. But also, like, I know that when people listen to bird sound for about 7 minutes on average, the parasympathetic nervous system turns on and the sympathetic nervous system turns off. And so I have heard a lot of women say, your content is so calming. And I'm like, I'm doing that on purpose. So then you can actually integrate the information I'm telling you that can sometimes be quite harsh and complicated, but we need to be calm so we can actually understand it and intellectualize it and remember it. And so that's the thing. I just don't think like this clean girl aesthetic is really going to work for me because it isn't calming. Like nature innately is a bit chaotic, in like a beautiful way. And so I'm trying to emulate that as much as I can.
Yeah, I see it, and Clean Girl's out anyway, like it's on the way out,
Oh,
so.
it's fine if you're a clean girl. My sister's a clean girl. Go you. It's just not me.
Okay, cool. And then for you have a retreat coming up, and I'd love it,
Yeah.
looks amazing. You said it's so it's in how do you say that? Infraradian, infradian.
Infradian, yeah. So the infradian cycle is the women's hormonal cycle. Everyone has a circadian system. Everyone has a circadian rhythm, but not everyone has an infradian cycle. But we changed the name retreat because not a lot of women actually understand that word. So we changed it to sync your cycle retreat. So it's five nights and 4 days, and each of the 4 days is each of the four phases of the cycle. So follicular, ovulatory, luteal, and menstrual. And so what we're doing is we're modeling what you should do in each part of the cycle. So for follicular, we're going for a beach run, we're going for an ice bath. Every day has a 3-hour lecture on how you should eat, supplement, exercise, what alternative therapies to do, and what type of sexual exercise works well in each phase of the cycle as well. Ovulatory, we're actually going out dancing that night because that's when you feel the juiciest, and it's just going to be fun to go out on a Saturday night in Bali anyway. And then we're also going for high intensity interval training. Then luteal is probably like one of the yummiest days. Like we're lazing near waterfalls, we're like having deep tissue massage, we're doing like breast massage because that's very often when women get sore boobs. And then menstrual is yin yoga. We're doing sound healing and a cacao ceremony to kind of close everything up. And then in amongst that, there's so many other things. Like where it's set is like right on the beach in Bali. And, you know, there are so many things to do around this area. You get a one-on-one with me, the woman I'm collaborating with, Jess Stingy. She's an amazing sports physiologist who specializes in women's health as well. And she's going to be leading all the exercises as well. There's like journaling, there's like a yoni egg when you rock up, you get all the charts. It's like very lush and like all the food's organic. And it's just, yeah, when we planned it, we were like this, we kind of just tried to plan the retreat that we'd like to go on. But it's basically designed so you can go, okay, I have 4 day experience and walking away, I'll know what to do with each phase of the cycle for the rest of my life because I've had this clearly like shown to me with each of the 4 days. So yeah, it's in Bali. It's from the 3rd to the 7th of August.
Awesome. And do you have any
Yeah.
spots left?
Yeah, we do have a few spots left.
Cool. Yeah, sounds beautiful. That sounds really lovely. And I like how you made each day a like a themed day around the cycle.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Instead of
Awesome.
kind of, yeah, instead of kind of like making it bitsy, I just think that would be a little bit too complicated. So I was like, let's just focus on one phase at a time.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then you have a lot of, you said, ebooks and books on Amazon and digital downloads as well.
Yeah, I have two books. So Infradian Nourishment, which is a cookbook. It has like 100 recipes. And so if you're like, I don't know how the fuck to get started on cycle syncing, just like buy that book because it'll tell you all the ingredients for each phase you need to learn, need to eat. So like vegetables, fruits, nuts, seeds, animal protein as well. And then it goes, here is 40 recipes for each, or 30 to 40 recipes for each, right? So it's just a good place to start. It's a world cookbook. So if you're in India, there's like bindi masala is in there, and there's also okra curries. And if you're in America, there's burgers and there's pizza. You know, there's something for everyone.
Thank God there's burgers and pizza.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. And then the other book is my most recent book I published this year on PCOS, which is like kind of a how-to guide of like, this is what PCOS is. This is how you diagnose it. This is how you supplement. This is how it affects pregnancy. This is how it affects your vaginal microbiome. And this is how you can kind of heal it. So this is how you eat. And then it has 40 recipes at the back as well. So if you know of anyone who has PCOS, that's available hardcover and as an ebook, just as a get like how you can get started. And then I have about three master classes. One's on fasting, so how women should fast, because you can't fast the same way every single cycle. There's the red tent, which is like, if you're going to start with any of my resources, start with the red tent, because that's going to go, this is your pussy, this is your clit, this is like this is your
That's
cycle, this is how you can
foundational.
avoid pregnancy naturally, this is how you yoni steam, you know, kind of wraps everything in one, so you can kind of have a really nice foundational start. And then my other one is on PCOS as well. So if you're a visual learner and you have PCOS, or you know of someone who has PCOS who is a visual learner, that's a really great place to start to go, oh, this is what this is. Yeah, and I have a course coming up which is on fertility awareness methods. So learning how you can use four biomarkers to avoid pregnancy naturally. So yeah, watch this space. There's always so much happening. So
Oh my
yeah.
gosh, yes, indeed. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Amazing.
That's all for today for the Your Own Medicine podcast. Thank you so much for listening. These episodes do come out pretty sporadically, so if you'd like to be notified each time a new episode comes out, please subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And you can always follow my journey along, which I always post when a new episode comes out on my social media, TikTok and Instagram at Kelly Klug Yoga. And feel free to keep in touch. You can also check out my website at kellyklugyoga.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.